Welcome to the Part-Time Money Podcast, Episode 23, From Unemployment to Owning Your Own Children's Clothing Company. I'm your host, Philip Taylor, creator of PT Money Personal Finance. The Part-Time Money Podcast is designed to help you discover new and interesting ways to make extra money and to learn the ins and outs of those money-making methods. Not from me, but from the people who are actually doing the work. Along the way, hopefully you can pick up a few entrepreneurial skills to help you in whatever money-making pursuit you take on. All right, today we're here with my friend Aliyah Jiwa, and we are continuing our mini-series on folks that, you know, went through some type of layoff or negative job situation and took that opportunity to then start a business of their own. And Aliyah actually started a children's clothing company called SpunkyStork.com. So we're going to learn about her experience of getting laid off and then how she sort of took that energy and transferred it over to starting a business out of her own, how she markets it, how she develops products and gets it in customers' hands and grows that business. So, Aliyah, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Phil. Thanks so much for having me.
Yep, my pleasure. So the first question I typically ask people is how'd you get started making part-time money? That's not necessarily your case, so let's take it a step back further and let's talk about the layoff situation that you or the negative employment experience that you went through that maybe sort of catapulted you into becoming a business owner. So tell me about that layoff experience.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And I think that a lot of people will be able to relate to this. So I, you know, was going to school in Switzerland. I was getting my master's degree over there, and the economy was, you know, kind of wobbly before I graduated, but I didn't have any problems or any fears and thought everything was going to be fine. And I ended up getting a contract job for a hospitality executive doing hotel development, and we won't get into all those boring details, but it was a great job overseas in Dubai, actually. And I went there, and the job actually never materialized, and it was quite devastating because I was stuck in another country. And, you know, didn't really speak the language, didn't know what was going on. And here I was, you know, freshly out of graduate school with absolutely nothing. So I moved back to the States. Obviously, I had to do that. I wasn't able to make anything happen over there. Moved back to the States and just started working as a freelancer, doing all kinds of odd jobs. So I was freelance writing, and I was working for promotion companies, and that entails everything from – it's rather embarrassing. I mean, passing out flyers on the street. This is in New York City, just so that you know. Passing out flyers on the street. I mean, I had friends that were dressing up as, you know, Jamba Juice mascots and, you know, crazy stuff. And I was doing a lot of freelance writing on the side. There's a great site called Elance that I use to kind of parlay into some money coming in. And when that wasn't really working out, I mean, it was working out, but, you know, you're living hand to mouth and it's kind of, you know, paycheck to paycheck, and there wasn't any ability for me to save any money or, you know, eat anything except for, you know, the $1 falafel on the corner of the street. So I decided I was going to, you know, start something, and I didn't quite know how to do that. And this kind of, I don't know if you want me to continue talking about how I started this or if you have any other follow-up questions, but.
Sure. Well, taking a step back, give us the time frame of sort of when you finished school and then when you, you know, found out that the job wasn't going to work out. What year are we talking about?
I graduated from school in 2008.
Okay.
And I moved overseas, you know, shortly after that. This was the end of 2008. And I actually ended up staying in Dubai for about 6 months waiting on this job to come to fruition, which is with no income. So they were, however, paying for my housing and things like that. So it wasn't completely you know, a bad situation, but you know, I didn't have a job.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came back to the States, I came in early 2009.
Okay.
And it took me, it was about 6 months before I decided let me figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. So emotionally, I mean, that must've been a tough time for you. You just finished this great, educational academic experience. And then sort of what you've been building up to that point, sort of, I don't know if in a way sort of came kind of crashing down on you, but just really had to, you know, figure out what to do next, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was devastating. I felt like a loser. There's no easy way to say it. I really felt down and dejected, and it's a huge blow to your ego. It's a huge blow to, you spend all this money on an education and you think you're actually going to be able to apply your degree in something. And it's just, it was horrible. Mm-hmm. It was very, it was very, very hard.
And so it sounds like you had, the housing and all paid for while you were over there in Dubai. But when you came back to the States, obviously at that point you were on your own. And so financially you talked a little bit about, living paycheck to paycheck, but was it a pretty stressful time for you early on in terms of what am I going to do, financially here?
Yeah, because nothing was solid. There was, it was a difficult situation. I had to come back and live at home with my mother, being in your early 30s, mm-hmm. Not the ideal situation, obviously, but I had to do that to save up a little bit of money as I was writing, doing all these weird writing gigs on the side, earning $50 here, $25 there. I got one job, I remember, for $400, and I was just jumping over the moon, which is, in hindsight, I laugh at now, but then it was a big deal. So when I'd saved up enough money, I moved with my then boyfriend to New York City. And you have to have quite a bit of money saved up to get an apartment there.
Sure.
So, it took about 6 months to save up enough money.
I see. Okay. All right. And talk me a little bit through the transition from sort of that phase of your life to coming up with the idea for Spunky Stork. And that's for everyone listening. That's at spunkystork.com.
Exactly. Thanks, Phil. it happened, all of these things are like happy accidents, or they kind of come to you as an epiphany. And I hate to sound cliched, but that's exactly what happened. I was living in New York, and it's really funny because a lot of people ask me this question: how did you come up with Spunky Stork, and what's the story? And people want to hear this really, fantastic story of inspiration, and it's supposed to be cool and glamorous, and it's really not. And I have to say I've made up a lot of stories along the way, but I'm gonna be really real here and tell you exactly how it happened. I just went to a festival in the middle of Little Italy, and that, these festivals where they have all the booths set up and they're selling funnel cakes and T-shirts and whatnot.
Sure.
And it was completely dead. I just moved there, so I was trying to kind of become acclimated and, figure out what was going on in the city. So I'd gone with a couple of my friends, and it was horrible. It was dead. There was no one there, which is really strange because in Manhattan, there's people everywhere. And but I did see one booth, one vendor that had a line. It was very busy. There was a lot of stuff going on there. And I was like, well, I got to go and check it out and see what's happening. There's so many people at this booth. So we went over there, and they're selling baby T-shirts. Mm. And I started asking questions to the person behind the booth. And then, of course, he figured out that I was asking questions, related to business. And so he kind of shooed me away, but not before I bought a couple of T-shirts. And I literally – and they were, really simple T-shirts that had a screen print on them. And I didn't even know what the word screen print meant at the time, but there was a screen print on the T-shirt. And I looked at them and I said, I can do this, and I can do this better. And I know that sounds so weird and simple, but that's exactly what I set out to do. Okay. So.
So it was literally just that feeling of I can do this better, and you knew there was a demand. So you've got some kind of entrepreneurial spirit to you where you is not necessarily the baby clothes themselves or the onesies themselves. But it was the idea of producing something that you knew could bring value to people and that would provide, possibly an income for you. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, if you see, it was like 1 + 1 = 2. I mean, you see all these people at this booth. There's a lot of other booths there that were selling equally nice things, and they were wonderful. But for some reason, everybody was piled at this. So yeah, I mean, a light bulb went off in my head, and I saw the designs, and they were wonderful. But I just knew that I could somehow make it better. I think that when you come up with a good business idea, I'm not saying that I have a good business idea, but usually if you have a good business idea, it's because you're meeting someone's needs, or you're meeting the needs of an audience or a market. And I think that I saw that, and absolutely.
Sure. So how'd you take it from that initial idea to actually becoming a full-blown business?
I mean, a lot of research. I think that, a lot of people might say, oh, I want to start, I want to start a T-shirt line, or, I want to sell my jewelry on Etsy, or, I have a great recipe. And I know I can cook really well. Maybe I can open up a little like restaurant or, you know, which is awesome. That's great. I know everyone has these talents and, you know, people can do all these wonderful things, but you know, you can't underestimate the power of research. And I did a lot of it, online. You know, there's a wealth of information online, obviously. And so I did a lot of research on different websites and, baby clothes and, you know, different companies, independent companies and bigger companies like the Babies R Us, Uses of the world. And then, you know, obviously pounding the pavement, going out and actually visiting baby clothing stores and boutiques and, checking out price points and, you know, literally counting the number of people that came in and out in an hour and little things like this to figure out, you know, is this viable? Like, can I actually make money from this? Are people going to buy my items? And what I found was that one of the kind of small but to be thriving markets were it was an organic or green cotton. So that's why all of the stuff that I offer on my site is all organic and green friendly, because I think that that's something that's been growing for about 10 years. I mean, if you look at companies like Whole Foods, who was, you know, they were a small company in Austin, Texas, you would know, that started, you know, I don't know, 15 years ago, however long it was. I mean, mm-hmm. Holy crap, you know, it's crazy. So that was kind of like the silver lining for me as well, because I found something else that was also great on top of the baby clothes. And everyone's going to have babies all the time. And you know, you have kids. I mean, you spend crazy money on kids. It's just, you know, baby showers and whatnot. So I knew there was a market there. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Well, how did you buy? Did you buy your first screen sure. printing machine, or put up a website first? Yeah. What was first?
So the first thing that I did was,
kudos to you for all the research. Sounds like you put into it.
You didn't
jump into this thing blindly. It sounds like you really spent some time learning about the market, which was great.
Yeah, no, and I think you really have to. I mean, you don't have to every time. I mean, people obviously succeed without doing that, but for me it was necessary, because you know, I didn't have $5,000 to just throw in the pot and say, hey, let's go. You know, I wanted to make sure that it was something. If I'm spending my money on it, it better be good. So what I started out doing was actually, I saved up about $200, which was a lot of money for me at the time. $200, and I got another. I hired a screen printing company to print my designs, and I actually designed everything in Photoshop. I didn't even know how to spell Photoshop. Okay, I had no idea. Seriously, I didn't even know what Adobe was, or I didn't know anything. So of course I purchased one of those bootleg versions of Photoshop from Craigslist. Okay, $50.
Awesome.
Right? Because who has $700? It's crazy. You don't have, it's so expensive. Software is expensive.
Right.
So I got a bootleg version off Craigslist from some guy in Queens, went to go pick it up, like in the back of an alley, like behind the Best Buy, like whatever it was. And, so I purchased this, and then I went on Amazon and got one of those books where you learn, you know, Photoshop for Dummies type of books, and learned enough to kind of make very kind of juvenile designs. Which I actually still sell some of those designs on the website today. They do fantastic for some reason. But when I say juvenile, I mean they're very amateur. They're not very detailed, and they're I think they're horrible. But people buy them. You'd be amazed what people buy. So I learned how to do that, and then I sent all of my artwork and everything to a screen printer in another state, and they printed on these T-shirts. This is before I had gone into organic and whatnot. They sent them to me. They were horrible. I spent $200 and I felt horrible because I couldn't do anything. I got my money back because I was very displeased with the product. And I was on the phone with my mother, bless her heart. I mean, she's just the best. Oh my gosh, she's giving me so much great advice. So she said to me, she's like, listen, if you're not happy with the way that they're printing them, why don't you just print them yourself? And I said, well, that's great. But I mean, I don't have a printing machine. I don't even know the first thing about how does this design even attach to this T-shirt. I don't even know how that process works. So I went online, Googled screen printing classes. This was on September 10th, 2009. I'll never forget this. And it showed that September 11th, which is, you know, obviously a date that everybody remembers, September 11th, 2009, the next day they had these classes in Long Island, New York. And I said, oh my gosh, it must be too late. I called up anyway. And they said, no, you're welcome. Like, come on in. I think it was, you know, $200. I think it was the amount of money that I'd gotten back from being unhappy with the order. I put back into the screen printing class, went for 2 days, sat on a train for 3 hours to go in like the middle of this like winter horrible, like, I don't know what, it was horrible weather, and learned how to screen print, came home. I got a loan from my mom for about $5,500 and purchased a screen printing machine, set it up in my kitchen of my 500 square foot apartment, like in the kit, like you can't, couldn't not go past that screen printing machine. Whether you wanted to go to the fridge or go to the bathroom or go sit down, nothing. Like there was, it was huge and it was there, like in my apartment. Like it was crazy.
So you were committed to this thing.
I was committed.
And so was your mom, it sounds like. That's great.
Yeah, she was. I mean, she was, well, my parents are entrepreneurs and I think that they, you know, yeah, they appreciate that and they really foster that. So I'm glad that she was there for me. And a lot of people don't have, you know, a mom or dad that would give them $5,000. But, you know, I was very lucky in that. And I've taken that $5,000 and grown it, you know, by many times. So I'm thankful for her. Absolutely. But yeah, I was printing t-shirts in my kitchen. I mean, if the people knew that they were buying these baby shirts from like someone that's eating pizza, like 2 feet away, like it was, yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy.
So you got the printing machine.
Yes.
And then what was next? Did you set up the website after that, or how long before the website came around?
I set up my own website because there's a program that I got from my, you know, bootleg version of Photoshop or whatever it was that I got some. It's called Dreamweaver, where you can set up your own website.
Okay.
So I read online, you know, how tutorials and things of how to do that. So I set up my website and it was, you know, nothing to write home about. Obviously in the beginning, it would look like, you know, a 5-year-old had done it, but, yeah, I set up my website and, you know, no one was ordering anything. And I was actually really upset. I remember talking to my friend and I, you know, was going on Google Analytics to check how many page views the website has had. And I think I had 2,200 and some page views before I got my first sale, which is a lot, you know, it's a lot of views. And after that, then it was dead again for another like 3 months. But what kind of saved me was a website called Etsy,
okay,
where you can sell all of your handmade stuff. And so I started getting some traction on Etsy, you know, taking pictures of my t-shirts and putting it on there. And then I was, you know, very lucky to be living in New York at the time. I actually snuck my way into one of my friends works at some of the trade shows in New York. So, you know, she snuck me in as one of the employees or people that work at one of the trade shows. And I went in there and did a lot. And I actually was able to do more research and look at other children's clothing lines and talk to people. And I actually ended up meeting someone from Philadelphia who had a gift store, and she placed like a $1,500 order with me, like on the spot right there.
Wow.
So it was really weird, but yeah. And so after that, I kind of got a lot better at, you know, calling boutiques and visiting boutiques and things like that. I mean, it took a lot of hard work, but yeah.
So how do you call up these? I mean, what do you tell these people when you call them? Do you just cold call them and you show them pictures? How does this work?
I mean, because I didn't, you know, before this lady approached me, I didn't even think of the possibility of wholesale. I said, okay, I'm going to sell my onesies and my t-shirts on my website, and that's it. And I didn't even register that, oh my gosh, I can get wholesale accounts to get bulk orders, and this would be great. So after that, I figured out, yeah, I just would print out my catalog, and I would take samples in like a little bag and walk into stores, literally. Just walk into a baby store, and say, hello, my name is so-and-so. I know you're super busy. I'm not here to waste your time or solicit. I just want to drop this off, and I just want you to give it to your buyer. And if you're interested, let me know. I think if you play the less aggressive role when it comes to, you know, selling, think that, you know, people appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And they're more apt to kind of be more curious as opposed to the person who comes in and says, you know, I have the best thing in the world and you got to try it and buy it and it's awesome. And I think if you kind of play the modesty card a little bit, which I've done, it's been quite successful. And last year I bought one of those JetBlue all you can jet passes. It was like $400 and it allows you to go for 1 month into any city you want to, for that $400, which is amazing. Cool. And I went to 14 cities in 3 weeks and rented a car. And some of the cities I'd never even been to in my life, rented a car. And of course, beforehand did the research of the stores that would be, I would be visiting, and did a whole map quest or Google map thing out of like where I'm going to be going. And I just walked into these places with my samples in a little briefcase with my logo, like ironed on to the front of the bag that I did at home. You could tell like that some child had probably done it. And just walked in and said, hey, here's my catalog. Here's a sample, and got names of people and buyers and, you know, tried to chat people up and followed up and followed up and followed up. And, you know, now I have over 4 or 5 dozen accounts all over the country. So
that's awesome. That's a great story. You're a hustler. I love it.
You know what? It's so funny that you say that, because my friend and I wanted to actually start a webcast of us, and we wanted to call it School of Hustle. Because we both really believe in hustling and pounding the pavement. I think that's the only way that you can really, you know,
So a quick question about that before we move on is the stores. How did you pick the stores? Did it have to be independent stores or a certain size? What was your threshold there?
I mean, I really was looking for, you know, the price point of my items are a little bit higher, and they're higher because it's, you know, it's an organic item, so it costs more for me to buy it. And plus, I'm printing all of these by hand, Phil, right? So I'm doing everything by myself, and I want to factor my labor in. I don't want to make it, you know, crazy, but it's at a price point where it would only fit with certain stores. So I would go online. One of the great resources that I use, and my other friends have used in completely different sectors outside of retail, has been Yelp.com. So I would go on Yelp and just type in baby boutiques, baby stores, and the city, obviously. And then it would bring up all these stores. And the great thing about Yelp is that some of the stores are reviewed by Yelpers. So you can see if it's like a good store, if it's a store that's going to be going out of business, or, you know, the selection is bad or selection is good. If they have an online component to their store, if they had an online component to their store, you better believe I'm definitely, because, you know, absolutely. I just did it that way. And I would go to the website and see what kind of stuff they were selling, and if they had any press, things like that, to see if it was a good store. So, and that's all. And I would obviously, you know, call the store and ask for the buyer and things like that. But I think that for me, the biggest resource was to use Yelp and just to go online and look up the store names.
That's a great tip.
Yeah.
Let's see. So how long was it before, you know, you really started, you know, making enough sales to sort of say this thing's doing well, it's taking off?
I was probably about a little bit over a year into it is when I started getting a lot more business. And I actually started doing drop shipping. So drop shipping, for those that don't know, I didn't know what it was, is when a store has an online component, or there's a store that is only online. And so what they would do is they would take the pictures from my website, put it on their store front, and whenever they make a sale, I would just ship it out to their customer with their packing slip. So once I got a really good reputation as a, you know, good drop shipper that ships on time and that ships what I say I'm going to ship, I started getting a lot more business. And yeah, it actually kind of just snowballed from there. And I think it was really word of mouth, because my marketing is really minimal. I mean, obviously I have a Facebook account and I have a Twitter account, and I try to do, I mean, I put out a sale code the other day. You know, you have sale codes, you get a certain percentage off if you type in this code. Mm-hmm. And not one person has used the sale code. And I put it on Facebook, I put it on Twitter. No one uses it. So it's really, my business is all word of mouth, and it's all, now it's mostly wholesale than actually people going on my website. So.
I see. So it's the business relationship that you had to set up beforehand that are really continuing to drive sales.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult for like a small independent brand like mine that just, you know, I mean, I thought of the name while I was taking a shower. I mean, it's just, no one knows it. It's, you know, it's, there's no brand recognition there. But if you attach yourself to another company, I mean, everyone's like, oh, I wish I could be, you know, selling my stuff at Target and Walmart and Sears and all this stuff. And yeah, you can do that. That's not something that's unattainable, but you do have to start off small in the specialty stores and the boutiques and show a track record of being able to, you know, ship on time and supply your customers and whatnot. So yeah, I mean, it's for me now, I think I'm concentrating on the wholesale side of the business, the B2B side, because I'm finding that that's a lot more profitable. Yes, I make more money per onesie and per t-shirt selling them online in my store, but I mean, if someone's buying 1,500 pieces from me, that, you know, I mean.
So are you still able to, you're not able to do it all by yourself still, right?
Oh, I do everything by myself still.
Really?
I actually have to do 1,700 onesies. I haven't started yet. Thanks a lot. I'm just kidding. I have to send out 1,700 onesies on Wednesday, and I haven't started. So, and it's only me. It's me, myself, and I. Yeah.
Okay. So are you considering starting to bring someone on or outsource some of the pieces here?
Yeah, I mean, I really want to outsource. I really do. I'm kind of right now on the brink of where it's too expensive for me to outsource, but it's also too labor intensive for me to continue on my own. So I will do that eventually, but it's so hard to let go. And I'm such a control freak and a micromanager that I, you know, when you start something from the, from your, from, you know, from the ground up and it's yourself, it's your baby, you have, there's like a lot of detachment issues that I have. And I think it's the same for anybody that has a business. I mean, it's really hard to trust somebody else. I mean, you have to at some point because you won't be able to grow if you don't trust someone else to
Sure.
help you do the work. But I'm on the fence right now. But eventually, yes. Right now, I'm still, you know, I'm having some problems detaching myself.
Sure. I think we all go through the same thing.
Yeah.
I like the book called E Myth by Michael Gerber.
Oh, yes. Yep.
It's
Yep. I've read it. Love
okay,
it.
okay. Talks a
Yeah.
lot about that, sort of letting that go. Let's see, what else? Have any of the wholesalers or you know the bigger brands that maybe push your products, have they sort of come back to you and said, hey, you need to change this up, we'd rather you do this? Have you changed your business to, I guess, fit better into the market?
Yeah, so I'll give you an example. This is so crazy that I've never talked about myself so much in my life. I mean, I feel a little awkward, but no, I'll continue. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, actually, yes, I haven't experienced that until just recently. We just signed. I always say we. I don't really mean we. When I talk to other people, like wholesalers, I always say we so that they think that there's more than one person behind the operation. Like, you know, and I'll make up names for myself. Like my nickname is Clementine, and then I'm also Melissa, and I mean, I have all kinds of names for like the sales manager and all the
Nice.
stuff. So, yeah, because you know, people have to think that you're bigger than you are. I know, isn't that ridiculous? It's just so ridiculous. So there's one company that we, in quotes, just got into a big distribution deal with, and they're pretty huge. And I had to kind of revamp everything about our offerings in order for them to take us on as a vendor. And I did so happily because I think it's going to be really great for sales and for the exposure and for the company in general. So yeah, I had to basically go back to and redesign some of my pictures that I've been using for, you know, over 2 years. And I had to go back and talk to my manufacturer that I actually buy my material from to see if they could change tags for me. I had to start offering different sizes that I've never offered before. So logistically, yes, a nightmare. And I'm still actually going through those changes, but I think it's worth it. I mean, you have to balance it out. You know, if it's something you think it's going to bring you know, small incremental revenue, then that's not worth it. But I think that it's going to be kind of a huge boost. So
Sure, and I would imagine they sort of help you build your business, you know, help Billy to
they
fine
do.
tune it and to, you know, because they've been in the business a long time, so.
Yeah, and they know what they know what sells. They know that there are certain sizes and colors that they were even asking me to change offerings for different colors. And you know, they know what sells, and it's great because you know they have a set completely separate you know arena for marketing and PR and stuff, and they're able to you know, kind of reach people that I would never in a million years be able to reach. So absolutely, I was on board to change a lot of things, and I'm still going through it. It's difficult, but yeah, in the long run, I think it'll pay off.
So when you take on a new customer, whether that be through a drop ship or from your website, do you do anything to help maybe facilitate a return or a repeat purchase?
Yes. And I've actually seen that this really, really works. So there's a few things that I do. You know, when I with drop shipping, it's very difficult. You know, you can't put your own literature into the packages because it has to look like it came from, you know, XYZ Corp and not Spunky Stork.
Sure.
So with those items, obviously there's nothing I can do except to put my hang tag on each of the items. But for this, from the stuff that comes from my website or otherwise that come from Spunky Stork, we do have obviously like little postcards that we put in. And I started recently, actually 6 months ago, putting on the back of the hang tag, you know, our Facebook and our Twitter. And also, it shows, you know, take a picture of your kid in Spunky Stork and send it to our email and, you know, be entered to win a onesie a month or whatever kind of promotion. And people will, take pictures and send them, and they'll buy more stuff and say, oh, we love this, and, communicate with you over email, which I think is, you know, fantastic. So that helps with a lot of repeat customers, or it has been helping with a lot of repeat customers so far. So, yeah.
So what do you do in a month in terms of sales?
It depends. It's really up and down. When I have like really big, you know, because the wholesale companies buy probably, you know, every other month, and it's kind of staggered. So it's difficult to say. On a really, really slow month, I'll make about $4,000. And on a really, really good month, I can make upwards of $16,000 to $17,000 a month.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so, you've seen that trending?
I have. I mean, the company's only a couple of years old, so it's difficult to kind of – I mean, obviously, I look year on year to check it out and see, but it's tough. It's tough to see, but it's been growing a lot in the past year. So just since every time I bring on new wholesale companies, it grows, obviously.
Well, that's great, and I would imagine as the economy improves, it would only improve for you.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really strange because I know that we're going through kind of a, you know, it's still a difficult time right now, but I don't see any of that affecting my business. And I'm thinking perhaps maybe it's because I do offer a high-end product, and the people that are less affected by the economy are those people that are, you know, in the higher HHI brackets, or I'm sorry, household income brackets, and the, you know, the more affluent people that kind of have the money to spend. I'm not sure. I mean, this is obviously just a theory of mine, but it hasn't affected it at all, really.
Well, you started pretty much at the low point, I would imagine, for most households.
Yeah. And maybe I grew along with, you know, how the economy's been kind of, you know, teetering and growing, you know, so maybe that has a lot to do with it as well. But,
yeah, but I definitely think you're onto something there with sticking with a high-end product like you're doing, and those people not being as affected. Because if they like something, they're going to keep coming back to it, regardless of the – if it's, you know, $10 or $15 more or whatever. But
yeah, no, absolutely, sure.
But the onesies and shirts look great. I mean, I'm looking at them, and – I mean, I love it.
Oh, thank you.
It's really good stuff.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's just, it's crazy to me. And I know a lot of people are listening and they're like, you know, I don't know, can I do this and can I do that? And you can. I mean, it's crazy to me, Phil, to think that, you know, I'm thinking about these designs, I'm putting them in Photoshop, and people are buying them. I mean, it's really like, it can really happen. And if you told me this 5 years ago, I would have laughed in your face. So I would have. But thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah,
I really
do. So obviously this has helped improve your financial situation, and you're able to pay that expensive New York rent now?
Oh my gosh, I left New York because it was so.
Okay.
I ended up leaving New York because I needed space to store, and I couldn't operate out of my kitchen anymore. And the business was growing, and we thought about relocating, you know, to Brooklyn or somewhere that was cheaper, but. It's just too expensive it was expensive for me. So I ended up moving back to my hometown, which is, in Orlando, Florida.
Okay.
So, Yeah, it's a lot more cost efficient for my business to be here.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So what's next? What kind of mistakes did you make along the way that might benefit someone who's looking to do what you did?
Oh my gosh. I mean, what mistakes did I not make? I made a lot of mistakes. I think the main mistake that I made, and I'll probably continue to make, is that I still keep a block up. I mean, I still think that, you know, this, I can't do this, I can't do that, this can't be done, or, you know, I can't just contact the store, they're never going to talk to me. Mm. I'm just a small person, and I probably have to have, you know, X, Y, and Z lined up before they even speak to me. I think a lot of them, yeah, I think being just assuming and being presumptuous has been my number one fallback, because if you ask for something, if you just ask for it, you'd be so surprised at what you get back. So I wish I had more balls in the beginning, because I might be in a different position now. So I think that's the first thing. I mean, obviously all of the other mistakes that I made are all technical related. If you would like to see some of my onesies that I made that did not, you know, that ended up on the cutting room floor, if you will, I don't even want to go there. But yeah, so things like that, where you have to kind of test out the market and see what people will buy and if they like it. And I definitely conducted a lot of unofficial focus groups with my friends and stuff to see if they liked anything. And a lot of things obviously bombed. I think, yeah, you have to, if you have like friends and family to gauge, that's also a big help. But yeah, it was more, I think for me, it was more about just being presumptuous and thinking that, you know, the store wasn't going to talk to me, or this person wouldn't entertain me, or I could never talk to Bank of America and get a small business loan, or yeah, it was all those types of things.
Right. Good stuff. So what's been the most exciting, surprising thing that's come from, you know, running your own business?
I mean, when you run your own business, every day is, you know, exciting and surprising. Crazy things happen every day. I mean, for me, it's just, well, I mean, gosh, what, I don't know. What would be the most,
have you had someone famous maybe purchase one?
Yeah,
I
was just about to say that. So, and I hate to talk about it too much, but we were invited to, the Golden Globes in January of last year. Somebody found our website through something, or, one thing that I like to do is reach out to a lot of the bloggers that are moms, or the mom bloggers, if you will, send them, you know, free onesies and t-shirts, and then they'll write about them and review them. And I think that somebody had caught, you know, read some review somewhere, and we were invited to the Golden Globes, and, we got to do like the whole gift swag suite where we, you know, hand out free stuff to all the celebrities, which is, you know, people are like, oh my gosh, like why do celebrities get so much free stuff? And they're the ones that can afford it. But on the other hand, if your celebrity is seen wearing, you know, the bracelet that you gave them or whatever, that can translate into, you know, great sales for your company and exposure that you can't get anywhere else. So that's why we do it. But I did have somebody that ordered from me recently, and she used to be married to Tom Cruise. That's all I'll say. So you can
very
figure it out.
Cool. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been, yeah, there's been some pretty cool people that have ordered from me, which is, yeah, it's awesome. And I actually have a copy of the t-shirt that she ordered sitting in my office right now. So it's a copy of it, but it just kind of reminds me every day that, look, this is, yeah, you're doing something really cool.
That's
so
nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, that's a wonderful story. Thanks so much for sharing that. And I'm always happy to talk to someone who's happy at what they're doing and having success with it. So congratulations
Thank
to you,
you
and continued you success.
So
yeah. Anything you'd like to share before we head out? Maybe talk about your product some more, or mention your website again?
No, the only thing I'd want to say is that I'm, you know, whoever's listening or whoever, you know, has an idea out there. And I know this is the cheesiest, most cliche thing to say, but I mean, you just have to jump into the water and do it. I mean, you can't, I have so many friends that sit there and talk about the ideas that they have, and they can talk, but I think it's really all about taking action. Like you can do it. If you can think it, you can seriously do it. Honestly, I don't even have children. I have a baby clothing company. I mean, come on. Seriously.
Maybe that's why you can do it. I don't know.
Exactly. No, it's like a drug dealer that sells drugs, right? Like I don't have my whatever. Anyway. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll end it there. Thanks so much, Aaliyah, for being on with me, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Phil. I really appreciate it.
That does it for this week's episode. Thanks so much for listening. You can find more episodes at ptmoney.com or on iTunes under the Part-Time Money Podcast. See you guys next week.